One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
All right, let's do this. I got to apologize, fellas. I got to take it easy on my voice this episode. There's not going to be any high energy from me. Well, I mean, you'll see me shaking like the Ultimate Warrior.
You still got the anger. Just
I want to see those 80s high notes, the hair metal just, ah!
I'm shooting a TV commercial tomorrow, and my voice is already a little bit strained, so I don't want it to go out on me. So anyways, you're going to have to be doing the heavy lifting with the yelling.
Ironically, it's a commercial for raspy voice.
It's lozenges, yeah. Fucking perfect.
So I got to, I want to bring this up. I've kind of like danced around it and hinted at it. So I do this Misfits tribute band, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's called
that's
The
why
Fiends.
Your voice is out.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons it's out. For doing
plus,
back
you
and vocals.
All those kids on his lawn.
That's true. I did it for fun. I have no aspirations to be a musician. Mm-hmm. There was a rumor I was quitting comedy to be in a tribute band. Not
right.
So. So the reason I even did this thing was mainly just to break up the monotony of stand-up comedy. Because just like anything else in the world, once you do something for a long time, it loses some of the magic. It loses some of its luster. You know, gone are the days where I walked into a comedy club and went, wow, pictures on the wall. Look at all the proud comedians that have come before me. By the way, don't Google those people. They're dead. Anyways, like...
Not all of them. Some of them just have crippling coke addictions.
That's
you don't
true.
Know.
That's true. And a stroke from it. So anyways, you know, I wanted to do something creative that, like, isn't stand-up like I do with my friends. It's been a lot of laughs, you know. I don't know if listeners have seen the videos I post online of us dressing like this idiotic band from the 80s and acting like clowns, but it's a lot of laughs. Anyways, though, we are just doing this for fun once in a while when our schedule allows, but I am now meeting and performing with other dudes in other tribute bands.
Yeah, I saw this last show. You're on the bill with a Guns N' Roses tribute band, which sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
Those guys were nice, but here's the thing. We've had to talk to a lot because we started to... let's do, you know, more tribute band shows because we've done shows like other just originals bands and it didn't quite match. So like, yeah, let's do more tribute nights. That'll be fun.
Right.
And I've come to realize after consorting with all kinds of folks is that there's only two types of guys in tribute bands. And I mean two. Number one, the guy I just described, me, which is, hey, let's jam with our friends and play some tunes we love, make some extra bucks, and not take it too seriously. Or the guy that I'm constantly running into that thinks he's the actual guy in the band he's pretending to be in. And I mean that from an ego standpoint.
Does he make you call him by that name off stage?
No.
Well, you never heard of method acting? Come on, Shores.
Well, I mean,
singing?
You're not far off. These guys are the Daniel Day-Lewis of tribute bands. Like, all right, so I think I can see where it may come from. When you're in a tribute band for a popular enough band, I've come to find out, it's a very cool feeling when like a little club that you'd have trouble selling out as a comedian or as your original band, as it were.
Right.
It would take years to get people through the door. And because you're in a tribute band,
it's like a little more fun. It's going to be more of a draw because there's like a sort of a gimmick there.
Right. You fast forward. I mean, you give up ever, you know, being in a band that has fans of you.
Right.
However, you fast forward right to people singing along with all your songs,
yep,
to filling up venues and
so having a built-in audience. I mean, that's the biggest one, right?
It's
like, is you go from unknown, I can make my way by writing a bunch of songs and performing them a lot and hopefully somebody appreciates my work and then blah, 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 to, oh, I'm just going to do what that guy did.
Right.
And he did it. And now all of a sudden, these people, they're not his fans. They're my fans.
Right.
Right.
And, I can, and you know what? There was a couple times because we sold out our first three shows. There was a couple times where we walked on stage and everyone cheered for us. I was like, holy shit, they dig us. And I had to remind myself, no, no. The person responsible for filling this venue this evening is not here tonight. Let's keep that in mind and just have a good time.
I actually think that would be the best job on earth. What if your job is to stand slightly off stage from any kind of tribute band night and loudly announce to the singer and band members, how they're actually not that big a deal. Like, every venue for a tribute band,
you work at AutoZone!
They have to hire this guy who's like a heckler, and he just sits there and constantly, yeah, he just like yells things at you like, you're on your third marriage and they're all fat. Like,
I mean, that's true of Vince Neil too, but so but you live in a studio apartment. That would be more accurate.
Yeah, there you go. No, you got here in a Toyota Tercel and that car hasn't been produced in a decade.
So anyways, one such incident, me and the guys, we decide, hey, you know what? You know who's playing down North Park at Bar Pink? Our favorite place, Bobby, is a Ramones cover band. Okay.
So, that's easy. You only got to remember three chords.
Right, right. Misfits, too. And I'm like, dude, Misfits, Ramones, same era, same. Yeah.
It's
I'm
a
like,
good match.
Yeah. I'm like, if we did a co-headlining show, like an 80s punk night tribute band thing, it would sell out easy. We could probably sell it for $15 a ticket. So I'm like, that's great. So let's go talk to these guys. There's some cash to be made here. Mm-hmm. So me and a couple more members of the Fiends, we go down to Bar Pink. It's a free show on a Wednesday. We go in and we're like, dude, these guys look like the actual guys, just like we did. They put in the effort. They dress up.
Right.
They're doing the banter in between songs. I'm like, dude, this is a great fit, man. And I'd been messaging him over Facebook like, hey, man, I'm in a Misfits thing. Let's talk after your show. Me and the boys will come down. They do an intermission during their show. A few of them go outside. We kind of follow them out there. I'm like, hey, man, I'm Ryan. I'm with that Misfits thing. We were talking online. One of them was like, oh, yeah, man, I heard you guys. Yeah, that's cool. But I don't make the deals. Our singer does. This guy was all feet on the ground, normal, down-to-earth dude.
Right.
The guy I'm talking to.
Which is why he doesn't make the deals, because he doesn't want to bicker with bar owners on a Wednesday night.
The bass player.
Yeah.
He's like, let me introduce you to our singer. This guy is in full character. That we're not near any audience now. It's just the three of us. Like, right, hey, man, right. I'm in that Misfits tribute. You know, I didn't come in costume. I'm just like, hey,
that
man.
That was your mistake. You definitely dressed up.
I'm in that Misfits tribute. He's like, listen, man, we don't just play for it with anybody, man. Listen, we are the number one Ramones tribute band in the world, okay? All right, we can't be risking our reputation. Now, I'm interested. But listen, me and my guys, we don't roll out of bed for less than $4,000. And
let me tell you, somebody.
Or a free Wednesday show.
Yeah, I was going to say, as somebody who has run a show at Bar Pink before, yes, you do.
Yeah, in a free show at that, on a Wednesday, me, Mike, and John, the other guys in my band, we literally stopped and looked around the bar as he's saying that. It has 15 people there. There's maybe 20, but that bar, if they give them 100% of the bar sales, it won't scratch.
And ownership in the bar.
Yeah, it will not scratch 1,000. We're like, and all, he's like, yeah, man, we're well known, man. I mean we're famous. You have to understand. And I'm like, we all of a sudden, we had that moment where we're slowly backing away from him. I'm like, oh my God, this guy thinks he's actually Joey Ramone. And it was clear as day. And so the thing is, I started talking to other bands. I'm like, all right, that guy was just one delusional nitwit. No worries there. I talked to a Motley Crue tribute band. I'm like, hey, guys, we're a Misfits thing. You know, we could do a little banter. There's stories about how the Misfits and Motley Crue got into a fight once. We could, like, you know, script something out. That'd be a lot of fun.
I could beat you up in between songs.
Same thing. Really? Hey, man, we don't just play with anyone. We're the number one Motley Crue tribute band in the world. What kind of dollars and cents? Dude, everyone knows us everywhere we go. We sell out. And by the way, these people, they really do come for us. Not because they like Motley Crue. It's really us.
Oh, my God. I bet it was the same guy from the Ramones band in a different outfit.
No. See, these guys are too dedicated. Here's how you know how dedicated they are. You go, prove it. Take off your hat. I want to see that you shaved your head. I want to see that you replicated male pattern baldness.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't need to replicate anything.
Have you murdered anybody? How committed are you to this?
So this happens over and over. Kiss band. Yeah, we're the number one in town here, you know. We don't play with you. And so anyways.
That was actually Gene Simmons. So
if you go right now to tributebandonline.com, I've got some very exciting merchandise rates for right now. Head to the website. So anyways, that was more Bernie Sanders. So I talked to a bunch of them. And I'm getting more and more like, oh my God, all these guys have egos. Like, they wrote all this music and they are filling these clubs when they're clearly not. It's all a gag. So I call a friend of mine who actually does make decent money in a tribute band. He's the drummer of Damage Inc., the Metallica thing.
Right.
And I know him to be a really decent, down-to-earth guy. He knows he's in a tribute band, but he gets paid to travel literally the world and play like Houses of Blues. And
it'd be great if the drummer for that tribute band sued Metallica for copyright infringement just to really get in the method acting part.
Right, but like I was saying, he's not like that. So anyways, it's integral to the story, and it's important you keep up with what I'm saying once in a while. Anyways, I call him. I'm like, dude, these people are fucking delusional, and you must have to deal with this all the time. He's like, nah, just mainly with Ramones, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, and Judas Priest. Literally all the guys I had talked to.
Is he talking about those specific groups or just the bands that mimic those
That
groups?
Was my next question. I went, oh, so you know the guys I talked to? He's like, oh, no, I don't know who you talked to. Those are just the bands that always do that.
Wow. That's hilarious. That say? If you were one of those guys, this is one of the ones that are still alive. Yeah. If you're one of those guys, what does that say about you that somebody imitating you, just trying to be you, becomes such an asshole that they're intolerable to others?
Yeah. So me and my tribute band, the Fake Misfits, go up to L.A. this weekend. We played a bar that was featured on Bar Rescue this past season. Funny story, they're about to close in 2 weeks, we found out, because they ignored everything. They're one of those bars that like reverted back and didn't take any of his advice.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a lot of the bars. Like, there's just such an ego involved. Like, yeah. You don't know how to run a bar.
Well, I mean, it takes some kind of ego to let things get to some point and not realize there's a problem and be forced to have some weird, possibly gay dude yell at you over how many drinks you serve per hour. It takes a while to get there, and then the hubris to kind of be like, you know what, I really have made a mistake. I'm going to turn stuff around. You're lucky if you get that point, and even if you get that point 2 weeks later, it usually
flips. Dude, I would bet even when this place closes, they would not blame themselves for it.
Yeah.
No. Well, anyways, this is all a nightmare because I make the deals for the band. You know, I'm using my experience as a stand-up comic to make them, and the deal I cut was 50% of the door for the Saturday night we were playing in L.A. I'm like, All right, fine, that's a good deal.
How many bands up?
It was supposed to be two.
Okay.
And the other one was a Guns N' Roses cover band. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. You know, that'll draw enough people. They'll probably make $1,000. Each band will get 500, and the band, the bar takes the
bar.
Elevated bar sales from this. So anyways, I go on the website right before we're supposed to go up, and I see five bands have been are all on this in one night. That is an overbooked show.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
That's a bringer show for music.
Every band has to bring two other bands to perform with them.
I reach out to some other guys. I'm like, hey, man, just so you know, that guy promised us 50% of the door. He's like, oh, yeah, us too. I talked to another band. Hey, the dude promised us 50% and the other band 50%. Oh, us too. None of them ever, like, you know, being like, oh, man, something doesn't add up. They're like,
this
yeah, sounds
Ralph
good.
This is some Ralph Wiggum math right here.
So I contact the fucking the booker. I'm like, and by the way, it's too late. We've booked our rooms.
Right.
We're committed. We've made flyers. We have friends coming. I'm like, I talked to the other bands, and you've promised all five people 50% of the door. And he's like, yeah, everyone gets 50%. I'm like, you understand how that math doesn't make up. This doesn't compute, right?
No, hang on. We got more than one door.
Yeah.
We're good.
You get the fire exit, unfortunately, so nothing
Ryan,
for you.
You should have played this against him because clearly he doesn't get math. So you just have to be the first person to collect your 50%, and you'll be fine. Right. Next guy gets half of that.
Yeah. So anyways, we go up there. The marquee doesn't have the right bands on it. I'm like, who the fuck are those guys? And then the guy's like, oh, yeah, that light burned out. So, I mean, we don't really update it because you can't see it at night. I'm like, yeah, but maybe take those bands off. How long have they been up there? He's like, I don't know, a month. So I'm like, all right.
Now, you just say you
awesome.
Used your experience as a comedian to book this. Sounds like a lot of things that happen at a comedy show as well.
Yeah, it was all bad. And then, like, their sound guy, he would just announce over the PA how many songs left you had. There's no light at the back of the room. It just, in the middle of your set, like, all right, guys, this next song. Hey, guys. Yeah. Announcement. You have four more songs. All right. Four. Remember, you have to get off right after that because we have four more bands. I'm a fucking idiot.
Oh, my God. Let's do that at comedy shows. All right. You got two jokes left. Yeah. Two jokes.
Two jokes. And then seriously, get off. I overbooked this with 30 comics, hoping each would bring one friend.
No tags. Just set up punch.
Yeah. Set up punch. Let's go. So anyway, that was a disaster. But they're like, yeah, we're closing in 2 weeks. So I'm like, yes, of course you are. And I watched that episode of Bar Rescue. They taught them nothing about how to book a show. I'm like, yeah. This all computes.
So how did the 50% of the door, what happened? Like, what was his...
Oh, it turned out to be a bringer show, but they don't want to tell you that because you wouldn't agree to play it. So they lied, and they said, you get 50% of the door. They used misleading language. And then it's like, oh, well, you get 50% of every ticket that says they're there to see you. I'm like, well, that's not what 50% of the door means. He's like, yes, it is. I'm like, no, it's not. And the guy, thinking I was just in a tribute band and not been touring for 9 years, goes, listen, you have a lot to learn about entertainment. I'm like... yes, I do, and so do you. And that's if that was the deal, you should have said you get 50% of the people you bring, which then makes this a piece of shit bringer show, and not 50% of the door, which means an entirely different thing. Don't try and tell me about deals. You obviously don't know shit about it. By the way, you have an AOL email address, which is true.
All right, I think we need to prank this guy.
So anyway, it was a disaster, but we stole a lot of stuff that didn't belong to us, so we made our money back.
Yeah, you top tank them. Nice.
Oh, we stole everything that wasn't nailed down. I got cords, I got mic stands.
I bet you were wishing so hard you wish you had some stink bombs in the car at that point.
I really do. Yeah. I got to give it up to you. So I got to ask you guys a question here. I was producing another show, comedy show. It was. I'm not going to mention the venue because it was not representative of the kind of staff that they have there, and I'm going to still do shows there. But I was. I went to go set up the show a day early, and I thought I knew everyone that worked at this place, but my contacts were not there that night. I was told go talk to Tori. She'll help you out. She knows you're coming. Because I went there a day early to load up the PA and work out the lighting and do all that pre-day shit. So I go in there. I'd never seen this person. It's just some frumpy emo chick just looking miserable. And
Tori's supposed to be hot. I don't like this.
And I go up. I'm like, hey, how's it going? And she just goes, and it doesn't even face me. I go up to her. I extend my hand to shake her hand. I go, hey, I'm Ryan. And she goes, I know. And turns her back to me. And then I'm like, and are you? And she's like, yeah, Tori, okay. Tell me if you need something. And just walks off. I'm like, all right, rude, whatever. So I go about setting up my lights. A little tiny ass Edison light bulb breaks on the floor. I'm like, I gotta clean that up. So I go peek my head into the bar area. It's a separate showroom. You've played there. You both have. I just poke my head in. I'm like, hey, do you have a, just trying to ask for a dust broom? She sees me and goes, ugh, will you just, to her other, her coworker, will you just see what he wants and just find out what he wants? Help him. Ugh. Just making a huge deal, waving the hands at me. All right. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, hey, man, I just need a dustpan and a broom. I broke a little light bulb. Oh, yeah, totally cool. He's like, oh, yeah, man, right here. Yeah. So anyway, I'm in there sweeping up. She comes storming in. She's like, I suppose you want me to turn more lights on for you to help you clean up? I'm like, no, I'm all right. I'm all right. And she goes, okay, well, you know what? I'd actually prefer that you have more light to clean up the glass because I don't know if you know how glass works. It cuts people. And, honey, it's not your insurance, okay? It's our insurance. Okay, honey? Great. So I'm going to just go ahead and turn some more lights on for you. I'm like, what the fuck is your problem? So anyways... I did mention it to my friend who's the manager there, but I instantly felt bad because I'm snitching on someone. But my question to you guys is, first of all, if she's doing this to me, she's doing it to customers.
Yep.
100%.
I don't know. Maybe just rubbing her the wrong way.
So my question to you guys is, whether it's as a hired contractor for the bar or as a customer, how shitty does an employee have to be to you before you turn into the can I speak to your manager person, which I know doesn't come easy to any of us.
Right.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's a good question because there's the part of me that just always wants to be like, all right, just get through this. Just walk away. This is done. Let's not make a thing about this.
But she was going out of her way to come back in to be shitty.
Right. So I'm just saying my natural instinct is let's just get on with my life. I've got a good life. This person clearly has a horrible one. I don't want to be around them. Blah, blah, blah. But then there also is this weird sense of responsibility of hey, hold on. How long am I going to let this go? Because like you said, if she's doing it to me, It's not like I walked in and she just hates me. Like, that's a possibility. I'm kind of a dick, but, like, probably not.
Not within the first few words out of your mouth.
And because here's what's happened is if there's enough people who do what I unfortunately do sometimes, which I admit, which is just brush it off. If there's enough people who do that, then when somebody does have the balls to finally stick up and be like, hey, you got a real problem back here, they're going to be like, I don't know. She's been working here for 2 years and nobody else has complained. Nobody else has. And so there comes this point where you're like, fuck, where is that line where I need to do it? So number one is if they're impeding you doing what you're trying to do. So, like, especially if it was like keeping the show from going. I think that's a no-brainer. If what they're doing is stopping the show from going on or scaring people out of the bar, you gotta bring it up to the person. Because guess what? The bar manager wants to know that. She's scaring away customers.
Right.
So that's a no-brainer. The gray zone is where it's just like, man, you're just really a real bitch to me. Like, what's going on with me? That's a real good one. Did you end up talking to the manager?
I did. What she told, first of all, she thanked me and she's like, this is a, you know, because she's a pro.
Well, here's the thing too. Like, I don't know if you guys think this way. This comes from my low self-esteem, but like, I always wonder too. I'm like, maybe like she's just having it the shitty day. Like, maybe her dog just died mm-hmm. and I'm going to talk to someone. Like, oh no, that's not how she always is. And then I feel bad. You know what I mean?
That's true. That could be that.
Well, that was explained to me. She goes, well, she's been having a rough time lately. Her grandma just died.
Okay.
Her grandma killed herself because she wouldn't stop bitching at her.
You know how she died? Light bulb.
You know, the thing with me is, and my wife has tried to coach me on this a little bit. I have too cavalier an attitude towards death.
Yeah, okay.
Because I lost my parents when I was a kid.
Sure.
My response, not out loud, but, you know, to myself, and they're like, her grandma died a few weeks ago. I'm like, she's 40 years old. She had a grandma?
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
No,
that's awesome.
I'm like you too. Yeah, like that to me. So I try to keep that inside because I know that socially that's not the norm. I'm just like,
right. Well,
grandma's died. That's what grandma's
did. Plus you're already negatively primed, right? Like if you just saw somebody crying, you're like, what happened? Like their grandma died. You'd be like, oh, that poor person. But then when somebody's been a dick to you the whole time, they're like, it's okay, their grandma died. You're like, eh, not good enough reason. Nah, I don't think so.
I'm like, I would have accepted parents or sibling for that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
For me, I grieve in brackets. I'm like, all right, okay. You're allowed to be sad about like for a long time about your grandma. If she dies when you're, you know, before 10, all right, that's acceptable. Parents, you know, once you get to 50, it's time to start emotionally preparing yourself a little bit.
Oh yeah, listen
and, up, Dave.
And then you know, when you reach your 70s, that spouse is primed to kick the bucket. Also, need to start emotionally preparing a little bit.
Right.
So when like a 41-year-old chick's like, my grandma died, I can't handle it. I'm like, you're in for so much more shit in this life. I don't know what you're gonna do about it.
That's a shitty one too. I would feel sad if my grandma died for sure. I don't think I would just act like a dick to people though. Like that's a weird instinct of like, hey, I'm kind of sad about something. Let's go be a bitch to this guy.
Right. Anyway, I had a listener write the show recently. She's been a longtime listener. She predates you guys, actually.
Wow.
She was listening.
Nothing predates us.
That's right. Especially Dave. He's old as fuck.
Oh, that's right. We retconned early episodes of this show. She asked, because I made a snide comment about a former cast member. I called TV's Mark Francis TV, who gives a fuck. she wrote me, and she's like, do you have feuds with all the former cast members? No. The answer is absolutely
not. One actually came to a show that we had, you and I had. And it was great. We took a picture.
Yeah. There's been three incarnations of this show, the early four episodes, then me and TV's Mark Francis and Brett, and now what you're listening to now. The guy whose name I won't, that's not his real name, I helped create that persona for him. He was just a dude. Here it is. Sometimes in entertainment, even low-level entertainment, some people tend to get an ego about themselves. And if you pair that with heavy, out-of-control drug use, that will also become a thing. He became a person that every time my phone rang, I'd have a panic attack because drugs had made him just so completely unstable that he was just a wild card that I couldn't deal with anymore. Perfect example. A little story for you that I couldn't tell on the air because I was still trying to maintain a friendship with him.
Okay, I'll just beep this part out. Beep.
Listeners, earmuffs, please.
The dude invited me to, and this is when he was really, really heavy into his drug use. I mean, bad. And he invited me to his birthday party at like an ins club in downtown, you know.
Oh, it's right up your alley, yeah.
Yeah, and me and Aaron, and I was like, No, I'm not going to be there. And so he went off the rails, as he always said to do, like, come on, man, I fucking will go, all the shit you go to me. Not true. And, you know, no one's going. Come on, man. I'm paying for the table. I'm paying for one bottle on bottle service. You got to go.
Does he know how much Coke he could buy with that? I mean, come on.
He had enough.
Yeah.
So me and Aaron agree to go. At 9 o'clock at night, we're trying to text him like, hey, man, we're waiting for you to tell us where to go. And he finally gets back to me. He's like, we're sitting around in our house with our dress clothes like an idiot. And so he's like, oh, yeah, come to this house first, man. We're going to pre-party. And we're like, okay, we're on our way. As we're on our way, he calls me. Hey, I need you to pick up beer, two bags of ice, and some 7-Up. I'm like, dude, I'm already on my way. He's like, come on, man. I'm paying for the table. I'm paying for the bottle service. You know, fucking the least you can do is do that.
I'm this like, is like a bringer party.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. I stop at a grocery store. I get a bag of ice. I get two liters of soda. I get some beer. We proceed. Phone rings again. Hey, man, I need you to stop and get some rolling papers for me. Listen, man, I already stopped. I'm paying for the bottle. I'm paying for the table. This is ridiculous. Least you could do is that. I'm like, okay, God damn it.
I feel like you're in an Abbott and Costello routine.
We get there, and he's got a bunch of weird friends dancing around on a myriad of fucking drugs. There is ecstasy, cocaine, weed, shrooms. Everything is on the table, and they're eating all of it like a buffet.
Wow.
That's too much even for me.
Yeah.
So anyways, and they're all making me and Aaron uncomfortable. You know, even this guy, my friend, now makes me uncomfortable in life. This new parade of friends that he's surrounded himself, because by the way, he's pushed out everyone but me at this point.
Sure.
With his erratic behavior. They're coming up to me like clearly on four different conflicting drugs. Like, hey, and one guy's like, yeah, I'm like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a sergeant in the Marines. I'm like, how can you be in the Marines and take just the amount of drugs that I'm seeing you do here?
Right.
I'm guessing by your usage, this is not like a one-time thing. He's like, don't worry, they'll never check. I'm like, all righty. So we get in this van, this Uber van. We go down to this club. It is just a fucking shit show. It's too crowded. We don't like it. Aaron's having anxiety. This is not my area to be in.
Right.
And so we kind of do what we do best, and we Irish goodbye. We just sneak out after like one drink.
They took all the drugs with them.
It occurred to me. Monday rolls around. Hey, man, where'd you go? Aaron got sick. Oh, okay. Anyway, man, we got to discuss what you owe me for that table.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, excuse me? He's like, yeah, you know, don't worry about splitting the whole thing, you know.
I'm asking everyone to cover 50% of the table.
You know, let's see. So the table was like 300, and then we ordered a bunch of bottles, and let's see. If you just want to throw me 500, that's cool.
Oh, my God.
And I said, what did you say?
Did you start going, I paid for the beer, I paid for the rolling papers, I paid...
So, I mean, at that point, I knew I was just in for a meltdown, you know?
Right.
And it was instances like that I no longer have a friendship with that guy. And so, no, there's no... I wonder, by the way, if on Halloween, he keeps tabs of all the kids that come to his door, like... Hey, is Timmy there?
He's going back to the house. It's door to door.
We got to talk about that Three Musketeers, you know, at full-size bars, too.
The good thing about people with really bad drug problems, though, is you can always just be like, oh, yeah, I paid you at the end of the night, remember?
Anyway, so no hard feelings with anyone from the past episodes. Not even with that guy. I just can't have that kind of thing in my life anymore. Have you guys ever had to cut out a friend like that?
Sure, yeah. Especially when they get too much into the drugs. The drugs is the big one, right? Because it takes, if you have a real friend that you've had for a while, that takes that person that you know and turns them into a different person. The juxtaposition, the other thing they think that can do that really strongly is the wrong partner. So like,
right.
They get a girlfriend or somebody who completely just fucks them up and turns them into a different person.
And dude, there's just as many relapses with that one. We've talked about that before. Yeah. And like, guys, I've gone cold turkey. The next time they show up to the party with them. Like, right. Oh, I talked to
Why is your hair parted weird? Oh, no! That's like the, instead of like, hey, why are you wearing a long sleeve shirt? I got to see if you, let me see your arm. I want to see if you have track marks. It's like, yeah. Why do you have a collared shirt on? Motherfucker!
Like a relationship tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby, got a science question for you.
All right.
I know you're not a zoologist, but you know, this might be right up your alley. A woman in Indonesia got eaten by a snake. Did you hear about that?
I did. I saw the video.
All right. Yeah. So there's a very graphic video of a snake being cut open.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how tiny was that woman?
I mean, she's from Indonesia, so pretty fucking tiny. Here's, and a similar thing happened to a dude, I think, in the Philippines last year.
Now, I know from just the little bit of research I did that snakes eating humans is not common.
No. And usually it's kids. If it is humans, it's children.
Right. Now, my question is, this fucking snake was 35 feet long or something.
Not quite that long, but very long, yes.
Yeah. I've seen how slow they move, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did this thing strike?
They're ambush predators. Okay. So a lot of these are aquatic ambush predators. So you go down to the water, similar to crocodiles, you go down to the water to collect water like you have to do in those places.
Right.
You don't see the thing, it's underwater, it jumps up and grabs you.
Okay, but do you, so, because my whole thing is like, the way I've always heard about snakes eating humans is they were like asleep on the ground in a field, and they
that could be that.
They yeah. slowly curl around. This woman was not. She was checking on her corn, yeah. not near water.
Oh.
Like, I mean, do you think she tripped and hit her head and then it slipped around?
No. She could easily just stumble upon it, especially if it's startled or if it was hunting her, but it could be that too.
Right.
And it just grabs a hold of you, man. And when it's that big and
but
you're
that
small.
Could it strike from the ground up to her face like that? Or is it?
Wouldn't
or,
need to. Just
where would it grab onto?
Any place. Grabs her arm and then it just wraps around.
Yeah. Once it wraps around, done.
Yep. Once it gets one coil around, when it's that size, you're done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless there's somebody else that can pry it off. But if you're all on your own, you're done.
Now, I heard that the reason they don't eat humans but can't eat like wild boars mainly and stuff like that is because of our shoulders, our broad shoulders.
Could be that. Like, it is hard to get anything big past them, but they can unhinge their jaw and get it out. I think more realistically, you're just not going to be in contact with them as much. Pigs are also, like, it's harder for them to get away, right? They can't jump up in a tree. They can't get away from them as easily. And then, you know, like, we're somewhat smart, a bit smarter than pigs. We can kind of figure out where those snakes are and avoid them. But that's one of the reasons it happens to kids a lot is little kids are dumb. They just wander around like idiots. They run into these things all the time. They're small. They're easily taken down. And little kids do get eaten by large snakes a decent amount of time.
Right.
How crazy is that we, I mean, that used to be a concern of our ancestors, was like, hopefully my child doesn't get eaten by that python.
Yeah, yeah. So, also, I was on Facebook Sunday, it was Father's Day.
Father's Day, yeah.
And, man, a lot of people hate their dads.
Apparently.
Yeah, there was
quite a range of Father's Day posts that I saw.
Right, they ranged from, Happy Father's Day to the greatest dad, or to their husband, that's all, you always love to see
right.
that. Then there was, hey, I missed you, Dad, you know, it's been a long, it's been 3 years, you know, bummer. Then there was the, my dad didn't do shit for me.
Right.
I'm like, all right, I'm sorry to hear that, I'm sorry. Then it was like, I was abused, I'm like, Maybe we keep that one.
Yeah.
And you always get the same thing like, hey, I need to put this out there. It's cathartic. I'm like, hey, I'm not telling you what you should and shouldn't post. Just, I'm starting to feel like everyone was either abused or their parents were their best friend. There's no middle ground.
Right. Yeah, ground is people like us that didn't say anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's the three categories. There's my dad was the best.
Yeah.
My dad is dead. Or my dad was horrible. And my dad was fine.
Yeah,
that's why I don't post about him.
Yeah,
my dad was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. I don't need an internet.
It was either like my dad taught me how to be a man, and I would be dead without him, or it's like, oh, I'm glad he's dead. I fucking
right.
He once told me no Nintendo.
One that weirds me out the most is the female who mentions how attractive her dad is. They like put pictures.
Look what a heartthrob he is.
It's like it's this weird vibe. Like, look at my dad's cock. It's awesome.
Yeah. I almost put up something like. Dear dads that messed up your little girls, thanks for the sex.
Right.
I thought
my early 20s, I appreciate
that. Yeah, I appreciate that. There was no one, auspiciously absent was the, my dad was all right. He tried hard. We didn't get along, but, you know, you're not always supposed to. It's, we didn't see eye to eye. We see each other twice a year.
I never went hungry. So it was fine. It was great.
He fed me, slapped me a couple times when I was really out of control. I didn't like that, but, you know, everyone parents different.
And I'm not a heroin addict. Good to go.
He did teach me how to escape a 30-foot snake that was hunting me. So.
Yep, never had any python problems. That was good. No alligators. Mainly no fear of cold-blooded creatures in general. That was cool.
It is funny that only a few generations ago, it was literally like, yeah, I'm a good parent. You see, I got 4 out of 5 of them weren't eaten by wildlife.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That used to be the mark of a good parent. Like, yeah. You know, one survived.
Oh, I didn't say it got survived. This wasn't eaten by wildlife. Oh, yeah. Only 2 survived.
Oh, there was smallpox galore.
Yeah, there's polio, a bunch of
measles.
Shit.
Measles.
Yeah, I sold one.
Well, what were you going to do? I had to get that anti-alligator net, you know?
Dude, I actually think that a lot when I see, because so many friends our age having kids.
Yeah.
And not to be insulting to them, no offense, but they post these pictures like, oh, 2 months today, 3 months today, uh-huh. 4 months, like, constantly. And I'm like, you know what? Back a couple generations ago, you'd be lucky to have 3 out of 7 still living.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, you have nothing to be celebrating.
No. You are. So, let me tell you, as a father of a young baby, it is a celebration because it's real hard to keep them alive. For a while there, they want to die almost. They have no instincts. They suck at living. They can't clear their throat if they get something in it. You have to do it for them. They're just the worst. You should celebrate every month you can keep that kid alive until they're like, I don't know, 8 months old. Because you actually, it's fairly difficult.
Yeah. All right.
Literally, they get killed
by... You're
doing
something wrong, because I feel like a lot of parents don't.
Dude, they get killed by blankets. That's what SIDS is. SIDS is just people leaving blankets in their kid's crib. That kills them. How shitty of a thing are you that a blanket can kill you?
So Bobby said, no blankets, and Bruce froze to death. It's catch 22.
No blanket. The snake will keep you warm.
So here's something I've been thinking about, and you guys tell me this. I saw this when an actor showed up on screen to advertise something, like their new show was coming out, and I knew nothing about the show. I saw this actor, and I went, this is going to be a good show. And I knew it because they don't do bad things. Now, I have plenty of actors that I like that I think are great. Sometimes they're in my favorite movie of all time. But I also understand that they did shitty movies.
My reflexive reaction
movies.
To that is bullshit. There's no actor that doesn't make anything bad.
I do have a list of actors, and I've thought about this and put this together, that I consider like the canary in the coal mine, because if anything is wrong, they're not in that movie. Similar to the canary, the tiniest bit of gas kills the canary, you know, to get out of the coal mine. Same thing. These people are only in quality films. Doesn't mean everything is 100%, but everything is an 85 or better.
All right, so what's your list?
Please say Ben Affleck.
You actually mentioned one earlier, Daniel Day-Lewis. Name a bad movie Daniel Day-Lewis has done.
I can name some boring ones.
Yes.
I don't know. I think most everything he's done is good, and he is good in it. So I put him in that list. Next up, I put Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell's very good, yes. Yeah.
I cannot think of a bad thing
Can
Sam
I
Rockwell
just go back to the whole Daniel Day-Lewis thing for just 1 second? I'm so sick of these people. It's like, you got to see this movie. It's so good. It's so good. It's good, so good. And then you watch it. Fucking snooze fest. You go to take the person to task, like, why did you recommend that horribly boring movie? And they go, oh, dude, did you see the visuals? I'm like, God damn it! If I wanted to see visuals, I'd go to a fucking modern art museum. I wouldn't watch a movie that's supposed to have storyline and captivating characters. So I feel like Daniel Day-Lewis is not batting 1,000 with that, because, like, you know...
Name one. What's the bad movie he's in?
Not
well,
bad.
We're talking about bad versus boring, which is different.
I'm saying name a movie that's under 85% that Daniel Day-Lewis is in.
Can I say boring ones? There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood is great.
It's a snooze fest.
Oh my God. All right.
It's like Ambien.
You guys are talking different things though. Like, I get what Bobby's saying. I totally get what
Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln was great.
If there were some zombies in there, it would have been great.
If he was fighting vampires, yeah.
That was a good one. All right, what else you got?
All right, so Daniel Day-Lewis is on there. He's my number 3. I guess I actually,
in the name of the Father. What's that even about?
I actually think Sam Rockwell is probably my number 1 because pretty. I mean, can you name anything he's done that's even under a 90%?
No, he's such
Ninja
a character
Turtles.
Actor. I'm having a hard time thinking of many of his movies at all.
Okay, Seven Psychopaths.
He was great in that.
Yeah,
the remake of Poltergeist. That turd.
I have not seen that, so I will take your word for it.
Ninja Turtles, the original.
He's in the Sam original
Rockwell?
Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
As what
is
a
he,
child?
6?
He plays a hoodlum.
Okay. All right. Well, I will excuse the Ninja Turtles.
Well, you got answer for Poltergeist.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. As far as I know, everything Sam Rockwell does is pretty damn good. And then I would put, this is the actor that made me think this, Billy Bob Thornton.
I do like Billy Bob.
Billy Bob Thornton does not only good stuff, he does great things and he makes them better. Watch the first season of Fargo. Billy Bob Thornton comes off as this spindly little middle-aged, maybe even older than middle-aged. Like he comes off as like a 55-year-old spindly little nothing that is terrifying.
Yeah.
By the time you're done with that, you're like, I am 6'1", I have done martial arts for a significant portion of my life, and I do not want to be in the same room as that man.
Okay. Dave, do you have this kind of actor?
I don't, but now he's naming lists. He's naming his names, and it made me think of character actor Sam Rockwell. I'm thinking William H. Macy.
William H. Macy, what's he in?
He was in Boogie Nights.
Great
movie.
He
was in Fargo.
Great
movie. He was in a ton of shit. He's a character actor.
I think you're right. I think William H. Macy would probably fit
in that. Cate Blanchett comes to mind. I'd have to look at these filmographies. But here, what I'm thinking, though, is like, there's some actors, I might not have the same perspective as you, but there's some actors, like, even if the movie's bad, they're good in it.
That's true, too.
I have a little, I don't have that actor that's a beacon of hope for movies like you guys do, but I do have character actors that I feel like only I'm a fan of, and I get really excited when I see them make a pop in a role, and most of them were in The Warriors or Predator. Like every time I see, like, James Remar, I'm like, Remar sighting! If I see, like, a David Patrick Kelly or a Clancy Brown, fucking Clancy sighting!
Yeah.
This is a piece of shit movie, but Clancy sighting!
Yeah, I have those, too.
Pet Sematary 2!
Now, interesting, similar but different, there's an actor who, I fucking love him, I mean, actor in quotes.
Right.
I fucking love him, but his filmography is dog shit, start to finish.
Okay.
The Rock. I fucking love The Rock. He's
okay.
Hilarious. He's likable. He has charisma, but he's made like one decent movie.
Oh, The Tooth Fairy was good.
The Other Guys.
I heard good things
about
Jumanji.
There's The Other Guys.
All of his movies are garbage.
What about Pain and Gain? That was all right.
I like that one. Most people hated that. I like that
one. Right. So, okay. So, yeah. All right. So that's, here's my question. What happened in the last 10 years where respected actors started churning out like three dog shit movies a year?
De Niro.
De Niro is one of them. You know, and listen, you're gonna laugh when I said respected actors, but look at Schwarzenegger, okay? That guy was like the highest paid movie star in the world before he went into office. Goes into office, and when he came out, I guess he just had some fucking lost time to make up for, because also, like, I felt like 3 to 4 Redbox direct-to-DVD movies a year starred Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, he's the reverse of the guy I always said started off with one of the best movies of all time, and then it was as if he went to his agent and said, I only want to do dog shit from now on. He's reversed it in the last 5 years and started doing really good movies.
Wait. His first movie was Hercules in New York. He thought that was the best movie ever?
No. I'm not talking about Arnold. I'm talking about a different actor.
Oh.
I said he did the reverse of this guy.
Okay.
This guy, again, started off with just one of the best movies ever made and then did dog shit for a decade and a half and then started doing really good movies about 5 years ago, and that's McConaughey.
Oh, he started off with...
Dazed and Confused.
No, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Yes, that was a great movie.
Now, McConaughey and DiCaprio, there's a few of those guys who, like, I noticed them are like, they start as just like party guys. Like, they're fucking hot. They're young. Women go, they do all these movies. But then at some point, they start to take themselves seriously. And so they start to look for the dramatic roles to win the awards and get that respect.
I don't know, dude. DiCaprio's been doing that for a long time, though. He did What's Eating Gilbert Grape when he was little. He did like a bunch of like high concept movies from a young age.
Oh, yeah, then he formed the Pussy Posse and went out and committed sex crimes.
Yes.
Probably.
I doubt he committed sex crimes. I think he had too much sex flying his way.
I think
his sex crime was hitting them off with a stick.
Yeah, but McConaughey, dude, like, you want to hear a funny thing about him, is a true story, is when he was still struggling, he did do the fourth installment to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
It's called, like, The Next Generation.
Right.
It was, like, 92. It was so bad they shelved it. It didn't make sense. They're like, even for a Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequel, this doesn't make a lick of sense. Like, they kept changing directors. Like, they're all on drugs. It was terrible. So they shelved it. It was him and another unknown at the time named Renee Zellweger. And so they put it on the shelf in 92. They're like, this is horrible. And by the way, you're all fired. You are all, anyone having anything to do with this movie is homeless starting tomorrow. And so they shelved it. Then 4 years later, Zellweger does Jerry Maguire and McConaughey does A Time to Kill. They both become A-listers overnight, and that studio is like, yeah, they look familiar.
Hey, we didn't throw that out, did we?
We have a Zellweger McConaughey picture on the shelf. Both of them tried to get their agents to block its release. Oh, and that poster, you know, it said, McConaughey, Zellweger, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4. They were like, what? It was confusing to people who didn't know the story. They're like, so these guys did, like, Oscar-caliber movies and then did this?
And then McConaughey did, like, 10 years of rom-coms and then started coming back with, like, Interstellar and other good movies.
We might be running out of time, but just because you brought up the horror movie, I want to get into this. Speaking of confusing horror movies, the Halloween reboot? Or is it a reboot or reimagining? What is it?
It's a retcon reboot. It's so confusing. I've not seen something like this in a very long time. It's like, usually, like, okay, they reboot it. It's all new actors, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A remake is when they just remake the first one.
Right.
Someone else is like, yeah, this is my version of what happened.
A reboot is where they make a sequel to the first one, but all new people, just like a remake, and they've cut out a lot of the sequels ever from existence.
Right,
that's
right.
That's the reboot, retcon, I'm not sure. This one, the first one exists, same actors. Oh, but a lot of that shit from the second one where my character was his sister, that's not true anymore. And 9 sequels didn't happen. It's so fucking confusing.
That's just weird.
The way the director, Danny McBride, described it was...
Did you say director Danny McBride?
Yeah, he wrote in...
That Danny McBride?
The Eastbound and Down.
Fist Danny, Foot Way Danny McBride?
Yep, he's behind all of this.
Oh my God.
And
it's actually starting to make more sense now.
He said, and you know, I was pissed off when I first saw that, like, Laurie Strode, a.k.a. Jamie Lee Curtis, is in it, but not his sister anymore, you know, which is a big part of it. What he
Michael
said,
Myers wears a hockey mask instead of a regular mask.
He says, you know, I think of this character like, you know, Batman comics or Superman comics, you know. Different creators and artists and writers all get their turn at, you know, giving him a origin or background story. I'm like, okay, all right. So hey, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I can actually respect that a little bit. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm. What do you say? Let's call it a week. Before we do, the comedy community lost some people this week. One of them I started out with, his name was Robert Stoopy, and he, like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, some people have some demons, and it's really unfortunate when they succumb to them. And we lost Robert Stoopy. He was in his early 30s, and he was basically the first friend I made in stand-up. So I've known him for 9 years, and then just not even a week later, San Diego comedy community lost a treasure of a guy. He worked at one of the big four clubs in town, and he, guys, help me out with describing Jimmy.
Jimmy was, first of all, just an amazing dude. He's one of the few good souls that you meet in comedy. You wondered what it was that gave him any kind of demons to be funny, because usually people who are funny have demons, and he just seemed like a really happy, upbeat guy. Literally, and people say this all the time when somebody passes, this is absolutely true. Put a smile on your face every time you saw him. I kind of consider him the same class as I was. He kind of started out around the same time.
Yeah.
So we were at a lot of the same mics and stuff together. He came to every single one of the first Kumites. Every single one. And every time I saw him, he gave me a big hug. He was like famous for that. He'd come in and give you a hug. He was just the sweetest, nicest dude that I've literally never heard a single person say a bad word about.
Never.
In a comedy community where people will talk shit for anything.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've had more shit talked about me than anything else. And nobody has ever said a bad word about him. He had this amazing laugh that would ring out from the back of the room.
That's
Mickey Mouse laugh.
And usually it was when your joke didn't hit.
Yes, yes. And he was great. And I said this online. It's absolutely true, which is you could bomb a set. And if you heard that laugh, you felt good when you got up. This one person could be in a crowd of 200 people, and they could make you happy that you walked off that stage. Just an awesome human being. Really, really good guy. He drowned, unfortunately. And it is a huge loss. Dave, I actually remember you winning Kumite in one of my favorite Jimmy moments ever.
That's unfortunately, it's not the one that I won, but that is an iconic Kumite moment. I did a 3-minute set with Jimmy clinging to my side like a little primate, and I was feeding him gummy bears in between jokes.
He was a smaller dude, and it was...
The way I would describe him to people who don't know him, like there are 500 or 600 comics in the San Diego comedy scene, easily.
Right.
He's, no exaggeration, he's the only one that nobody didn't like him.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's
nobody had a bad thing.
Very rare.
Yes.
No one in here can say that about themselves.
He was a funny dude. He did not take himself too seriously. He was the first person to like make fun of his own jokes and be like, I didn't hit it all, huh? He never had like a harsh word to say. He was just such a good dude. You do the thing when that guy passes where you go, why couldn't it have been anybody else? Like, and you start naming people like, that guy's an asshole. Why couldn't it have been him?
Lars Ulrich still walks the earth. He once beat me to the punch on a joke. I had a premise laying around forever. You know, one of those things you just put on the shelf and go, that's never going to work. He had a joke about how vampires look so good when they can't see the reflection. And I watched it hit at a club. I'm like, damn it, I've had that joke for fucking 5 years and never tried it. He had the balls to do it. It paid off. God bless him. So anyway, we lost those two guys, Robert Stoopy and Jimmy Wolpert. We want to do a quick moment of silence for him. Starting now. We miss you guys. See you next week.
Motherfucking time is passing by.